3:07. Welcome to the dynamic duo, I believe is what we used to call it, in the studio with me, none other than the star of morning radio, Jim McKinney.
Oh, yeah.
And
I got a lot of help in the morning, believe me.
Yeah, but nonetheless, the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you carry it so well. But you came into the building this afternoon in a snit.
Well, I was half snit and half happy, laughing. Really stupid drivers, you know, have a tendency to make me mad. You know that, and I'll go off on
you,
them.
You get mad at drivers?
Yeah,
and make obscene gestures?
Now, we don't do that now, though. Remember, it's hunting season.
Yeah, that's right.
Know, if it's rabbit season.
I forgot your rule. Don't flip off other drivers when they likely may have a gun in their car.
Or a crossbow.
Yeah.
The silent but deadly killer. No, I was on 131.
Yeah.
70 miles an hour, you know, just before Stadium Drive. Two cars got next to each other and decided they were going to go 60 miles an hour. And traffic was building up behind them. And the person next to me was not a happy camper. Uh-huh. There was a person ahead who was not a happy camper. And I'm like, I'm a little annoyed over this, but hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And they just kept going and going and going. And then all of a sudden, everybody's anger seemed to cease when they saw the Michigan State Trooper sitting in one of those things that they're allowed to use, but, you know, says emergency vehicle, the crossovers, right after it turned 60 going into the construction zone. So it was like, okay, we'll drive 60.
Yeah.
All the anger, I think, went away. But it was fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could see steam just coming out of their ears.
The people that bug me the most are the people who don't understand the left-hand lane is a passing lane. And if you're not passing somebody, you're not supposed to be in that lane. it's really quite simple. It is not a travel lane.
No.
It is a passing lane. And you use that lane to, I know this is complex.
I know.
Pass cars.
Yes.
And that really irritates me. And then you see these people who were just driving in the left lane, and they think they own that
lane.
And so if you use the left lane for its intended purpose, passing, they see that as a lane violation.
Oh, of course. Yes. Now, there are some places that I'll have to drive in the left-hand lane because it ruins my car if I drive in the right-hand lane.
Oh,
like there's that little stretch by Sprinkle Road where it just boom, 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 just tears up your car. So I drive in the left-hand lane, and I'll get in the right-hand lane.
I have seen signs, I don't believe in Michigan, which is hard to believe because Michigan has the worst roads of the country, but where it tells you to drive in the left-hand lane. I believe it was down south where it gets really hot, and they tend to wear grooves in the road.
Yes.
And now that I'm thinking about it, it said heavy trucks have to use the left-hand lane. No, the left-hand lane.
Oh, the left lane, okay.
Because the right-hand lane was so chewed up.
But I see.
In the absence of those signs, it irritates me that people use the left-hand lane just as a cruising lane.
Yeah, and it happens.
I wouldn't be so aggravated with the person in the right-hand lane in the incident that you encountered.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person in the left-hand lane who wasn't passing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they people passed him. He or she got an eyeful.
And do you feel better now?
You know,
I don't charge for these counseling
sessions. I give you a nickel.
No, you would have to pay what it was worth, and it isn't worth a nickel. But you come in anytime you want.
This is fun.
I'm going to have a couch installed.
Okay.
soon, and you could come in and lay down and tell Uncle Roger your problems.
Yeah, the only problem is, Roger, if I lay down right now,
you'd be asleep.
I'd be asleep.
Yeah.
And you would make fun of me.
Well, it's good seeing you.
It's nice
you.
To see you, too. I miss being on the air with you.
I I miss.
It's a lot of fun, but I've been listening, and I'm loving it. So.
Yeah, cool. I miss working with you in the afternoons, and, you know, what goes around comes around, and the dynamic duo may be back together
someday.
You
never know, and it could be fun. Yeah, so you've been warned, everybody.
Yeah. Have a good weekend.
Hey, can I do something just
sure.
one last time?
Sure.
I think we should start the show.
Let's start the show, and we're going to start it with Friday music. A beautiful 71 degrees. We're going to talk with Bob Larson at 3:40 this afternoon. We'll find out exactly what your weekend weather is going to be. I mean, that's why it's called AccuWeather, after all. Joining me now, and I've kept him on hold for several minutes, is Rob Sisson. Sorry, Rob, we had old home week here. Jim McKinney stopped by, and are you there, Rob?
I'm here, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so, sorry, I left you on hold for a minute.
That's okay.
Haven't seen him in several weeks. It was fun to talk to him. Joining me now, Rob Sisson. He is the president of Conserve America. He is a conservative who actually sees the word conserve in conservative. And we're going to talk about yet another oil spill and the implications for the big pipeline. Rob, I'm certain you saw in the news the 20,000 barrel oil leak in North Dakota that went on apparently for some time without anybody noticing, because it came through a hole about the size of a pencil. And so it had been leaking for a while. What does this do for your comfort level on new pipelines in this country?
Well, you know, I'm curious. I'm anxious to see the report on that spill, because the farmer that found it said that oil was gushing like a faucet up to a half a foot out of the ground, and it's hard to believe it could come up through, you know, pretty heavy soil and still have momentum only out of a hole the size of a quarter of an inch, but... well, I'll take it at face value right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think there are some lessons learned here, or lessons that we haven't addressed yet. I'm not sure if a leak that small could have been detected automatically, which is one of the things that environmentalists would like to see on pipelines, is automatic detection for spills, so mm-hmm. that and mm-hmm. valves that would automatically shut if there was a spill detected.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure in this case if that would have happened. I think one of the positive things, though, is this route where this pipeline went through is in an area of very heavy clay, so that the spill was actually contained and prevented from sinking into down into groundwater sources or spreading. So that was a positive. I mean, it seems to have been a well-plotted path for the pipeline.
Well, and there's no nearby water of any kind.
Right, and it's very remote. It's interesting. I tried to find response from residents in that area of North Dakota, and this is in the northwest part of the state, where all that activity is going on right now in the oil and gas industry.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about the man camps and things like that. This is where it happened.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if, given the huge economic boon that's going on up there, if anybody speaks out negatively. I did see the governor. It took several days for this to be reported to the governor and become public information. And I think that's a problem. I mean, people need to be made aware of this. Not only do the officials, proper officials need to be alerted, but I think the public has a right to know what's going on. So it's going to be interesting to find out why that happened.
Yeah, because it was almost 2 weeks after the leak before there was public information about it.
Right. And this will play into today's news, or the news of the last week, is some people attribute it, there's a national response center, and it's believed, or I've seen it speculated, that the government shutdown affected communication with the national response center and prevented this from, the proper officials from being notified or brought in on this in a timely fashion.
One more thing we didn't know was going to happen when we shut the government down, huh?
Yeah.
Rob, do you know on the new pipeline that's going through southwest Michigan, will that have state-of-the-art alerts for any kind of leak? And is there any chance it would be more effective than the leak detection on this pipeline in North Dakota?
I don't know that answer, Roger. I think when we talk to oil and gas companies, they generally welcome better oversight, better inspections. And what we often hear from government bureaucrats is, we just don't have enough money to put people on the field or deploy the technology we need. So I think I really believe that pipelines are the most effective, efficient, safest way to transport hydrocarbons, liquids, and gases.
Mm-hmm.
Better than putting them on over-the-road trucks or on rail cars.
Yeah.
But it's like other issues. We're not properly pricing the commodity that's going through there for all the cost associated with it. And so that might be a national discussion we need to have, some kind of a per barrel fee that then would go directly to improving oversight and inspections.
Exactly. There are ways to monitor these things. And
yeah, I mean, I certainly don't mind paying another few cents per gallon of gasoline if it means that we can prevent, a good portion of these spills. I mean, I think statistically there are several spills every day across the country. Most of them are very minor and caught very early, but
mm-hmm.
It's these large ones that really catch our attention, and we start asking what if. And here in West Michigan, we don't have to ask that. We saw it in the Kalamazoo River.
Yeah. There is no doubt in our mind what happens when tar sands oil encounters cold water. It solidifies and sinks. and you have to literally dredge it out of the river. That's you know, in the back of my mind is a concern over the pipelines that cross the straits. Those are old pipelines. We've just increased the pressure on them. And my guess is a pipeline that's the age of the Mackinac Bridge was not built with current day state-of-the-art leak detection on those pipelines. And when we see these leaks in newer pipelines, it worries me the ticking time bomb we may have in other places. And there's certainly a lot of deep, cold water in the straits. And mixing tar sands oil in there would be devastating for long periods of time.
Yeah, and I think as a nation, we probably should prioritize different sections of pipeline that we really think are critical for better monitoring. And I think, of course, going through the straits, and 20% of the world's fresh surface water would be right at the top of the list as a place we'd want to try to pay attention and try to put safety precautions in place.
Yeah, maybe a little extra precaution. In clay fields in northwest North Dakota, where there's no risk to rivers or streams or lakes, and the soil itself keeps it from sinking into the ground, that would be a place that could be lower priority if you were approaching this in a rational manner.
Correct.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Rob. Appreciate your thoughts. Always good to hear a conservative view of the issues that concern me. Always good to talk with you.
You too, Roger. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Wait, before you go, if people want to learn more about Conserve America, you got to get your free plug in, Rob.
ConserveAmerica.org or on Facebook.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
See ya. Always fun talking to Rob Sisson. 71 degrees, another beautiful day out there. Life is good. Yeah, you made it to Friday. At least you're close to the weekend. Some of us within 90 minutes of the weekend. Hope you're having a good day, and Bob Larson will be along. We've had really good weather while Dave Samuel filled in for Bob. And now we'll find out just what kind of weather Bob Larson brings to the equation. He's back, but I'm a little nervous. Honestly, I'm a little nervous that the good weather that Dave Samuel brought us is going away with the return of Bob Larson. Hi, Bob.
Hi there, Roger. You're nervous, huh?
Yeah, we've had such great weather, and Dave Samuel did a really good job in your absence.
He delivered the goods.
Maybe even weather than you've been able to bring us.
Well, fair is fair. I'm back. How's the weather today?
It's beautiful.
Okay, so yeah. You make it sound as if I come back and it's pouring down rain.
No, but I want to know how long this beautiful weather is going to continue.
What if I said 4 months?
I'd know you were lying.
Okay. You're on to me. Yep.
Yeah. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks, Roger. How are you?
I'm good. We have had a string of just incredible weather.
Absolutely.
How long does it go on?
Well, I think we're going to squeeze that one more nice day after today. Things start to change tomorrow night. Front comes through. But as far as cold fronts go for mid-October, this one's pretty wimpy. It's not going to be followed by any really cold weather by any means. It won't have much moisture with it, maybe a couple of showers. So all things considered, not bad. And we'll hold on to the beautiful weather today into tonight. And tomorrow's still nice, well into the 70s and still at least partly sunny.
Okay. Then the cold front comes through.
Right.
And how much chillier does it get?
Again, not all that much. Here we are above 70 degrees today. We'll be well into the 70s again tomorrow. The front brings with it just a couple of showers tomorrow evening and after and probably less than a quarter inch of rain. Very spotty, not all that much. And after the front goes by, maybe about 10 degrees cooler on Sunday. Instead of 75 or 6, it's about 66 on Sunday for a high. And about the same, maybe 64 or so on Monday. The next front to come along probably has two things that would be different than this front. Number one, I believe there's more moisture with it. I'm speaking about midweek, maybe Wednesday.
Okay.
And number two, it's followed by cooler weather at the end of the week. Even then, not going to be all that cold, but we might have a day or two where it's in the 50s for high and lows in the 30s. So it will be more noticeably cooler behind the second front, which doesn't get here until Wednesday of next week.
And I don't think we've had any 50-degree highs yet, have we?
I have to check. I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't recall one. And
there
so,
may have been a day. It hasn't happened this month, although there may have been a day where a good part of the time it was in the 50s during the day, but the high was reached.
Oh, late in the afternoon.
Late in the afternoon, or we've had some cases in the past where it's a very mild night and it's 60 degrees at 6 a.m. The front comes through and drops to 52 and never gets back to 60. So the high for the day is 60, 61, but during the day it was actually in the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay, on Monday of this past week, the first day that I was out, their high was 61, so we barely made it out of the 50s on Monday. But aside from that, we've been in the 70s, if not 80s. This month of October, we did have one official 80-degree day, and that was back on October 2nd.
Well, it is Friday, and so it is time to go geek.
It is. Let's start with a yearly comparison. We're going to compare 2012 to 2013 at this point in October. Last year at this stage of the game, we were 3.8 degrees above average for the year. And the theme, of course, all year long this year has been below average, has it not?
Yes.
Well, guess what?
We're above average again.
We're right at average.
Ah.
52.4, right at average because of the recent warmth. It's been eating away at the deficit, and now we're right even at 52.4. Precipitation-wise, here's something that really hasn't changed. Last year, still way below average. 21.39 inches of rain. That was over 7 inches drier than it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 34.06, that's about 5.5 wetter than average.
But we're chipping away slowly at that, too.
Yeah,
we
are chipping
now?
Away at that because it has been relatively dry for the month. And here's where we've really seen things turn around. Last October, even though 2012 was predominantly a mild year, a warm year, the month of October was actually chilly. We are at 50.5 degrees, 3.8 degrees below average for the month. And again, this is just the first third of the month. But this October so far, 7.6 degrees above average. So in what has been mostly a cool year, it has been a warm October, more or less opposite of last October, last year. Now, precipitation-wise, last October, we were about a half inch. That's about a half inch below average. This October, 1.09, which is pretty much average. Average is 1.07.
Yeah. Bob, do I recall there seeing a pattern that if we have a dry, warm fall, that more wet, severe winters follow that? Or is that an old wives' tale that I bought into?
Probably more of a wives' tale than anything else because many times we'll end up with an early season cold shot and it'll be chilly in October, and the thought is, oh, it's going to be a horrible winter, and it goes the other way, and it's mild. And sometimes it's what you have described in the sense that where it's warm in October, and before you know it's a cold winter. But there's no direct correlation that it's always going to turn opposite once you get into wintertime. I think the bottom line is, the moral of the story is, you can't base the winter on what's happening in October one way or the other.
Yeah. As we're seeing in temperature, Mother Nature tends to want to average these things out.
Yeah, it does. And we've had most of this year, of course, as we've been saying, it's been cool. And it's like we're playing catch up now with the recent warm up, trying to balance things out. But I would be concerned that the next flip that takes place in the overall weather pattern would be a change to colder. And that might happen just in time for as winter is arriving. So that is a fear down the road. I don't have anything scientific to base that on. It just thinking of the law of averages and speculation.
Yeah. Logic would suggest if it's abnormally warm, at some point there's going to be an abnormally cold period to balance.
And I can tell you this much. I was out of town this week and half of last week delivering. I was leading weather seminars at different cities across the country, and we were talking solely and speaking solely about the upcoming winter forecast. Now, we're almost out of time here. We can talk more about this at length, but in a nutshell, boiling it all down, we expect a reasonably mild start to the winter season. Speaking of December, that's not really saying November because we consider that still fall.
Right.
But as the winter evolves, it gets colder with respect to average January and especially February, kind of a backloaded winter rather than one that starts all at once.
Okay. Well,
and I can expand on that when we get to next week. I didn't want to leave you hanging there, but that is the capsulized version.
There you go. The abridged version.
Yes.
Yes. Hey, have a good weekend, Bob.
Thanks,
and
Roger,
seriously, welcome back.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. Bob Larson from AccuWeather, extraordinaire meteorologist. And speaking of extraordinary, in the studio with me now, Dr. Sports, who is the recipient of a free beer from Roger.
From the Birdman.
Yeah, we made a bet yesterday. And I'm thinking, you know, you said I could be the Jinx if I bet against the Tigers. I'm thinking it's my betting against them that's causing them to win.
Hey, keep it up, because at the rate that you're going, the Tigers are headed to the World Series and headed to a World Series championship, no less. And I'm headed to at least a six-pack of beer.
Well, what we decided today is we're going double or nothing on tomorrow's game. And she's putting up the beer. She's already won. Sticking to the Tigers.
Yes, I am.
And why are you so convinced they're going to pull this off, Carolyn?
Just look at the regular season that Justin Verlander had. It was quite pedestrian after he had had multiple all-star seasons, of course, last year notwithstanding. But last night was just so magical all the way around. It was really the culmination of the sum of the parts of this team. And it's like when the offense has struggled, you know, the starting pitching was there and putting them in positions to win baseball games. And when the offense was hot, the starting pitching was struggling. And so last night was really the culmination of both of those things coming together. Justin Verlander was the ace that we all expect him to be and expected him to be this year. Meanwhile, Miguel Cabrera, who's been injured throughout the, you know, last part of the better part of the last, you know, couple months, He flicks a two-run shutout in the fourth inning, and that was the hammer. And that was really the thing that said, this team is back. And it was the stars that came out to shine, but it was kind of the background players that have been keeping them in this position and kind of keeping the faith alive. Despite the struggles that happened leading into this postseason, it was just the performances from the guys that you expect to perform that were there for me.
I am a regular viewer of Morning Joe, and Mike Barnicle he's not totally objective. He's a Boston fan, since that's where he's from. And even he was waxing eloquent about Verlander. He said, there's the man. If you want to see professional baseball, he epitomizes the professional ball player,
and his kind of perseverance through the struggles and through the kind of pedestrian regular season that he had. Of course, in the media, we're all going to tear him apart, you know, from the outside looking in, just because he's like, oh, well, this isn't, you know, this is what you did last year. Why are we paying you $200 million?
Yeah.
And he just kept working and working and grinding. And he had the faith. I'm absolutely certain that Jim Leland and that clubhouse had the faith in him. And I just had a good feeling about Justin Verlander last night. And it, it felt like I was watching the Justin Verlander that we've come to expect. And that makes me feel a whole lot better heading into this ALCS. And I know I'm not the only Tigers fan out there.
You think?
Thinking that.
Yeah.
But if they're going to run into a buzzsaw, it is the Boston Red Sox, another storied franchise in Major League Baseball. And they tout a great starting rotation. They've got David Ortiz and Justin Pedroia, just to name a couple of bats to look at. But this is what a true postseason matchup is supposed to be, and I can't wait. And this is October, and I love it.
Who's pitching tomorrow?
It is going to be Anibal Sanchez pitching.
Oh, okay.
And that should, I mean, he's had the American League's best ERA, and so, you know, he's, when we talk about starting pitching for the Detroit Tigers, of course, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer are the first two names to come out, but Anibal Sanchez kind of riding quietly in the background, and I think it's going to be a good thing for them in game one.
What time is the game tomorrow?
It's 8 o'clock. First pitch will be a 7:40 start.
Right, and here, we'll carry it live right here on 590 WKZO. And who does Western play tomorrow?
Western. Sorry. Huh, you got me in baseball mode.
Buffalo.
I've switched.
Woohoo! Okay, Carolyn, we're going to talk football now.
Western Michigan and Buffalo in the 90th homecoming for Western Michigan, of course, and so all the alumni coming back to Waldo Stadium, including my
own dad.
Yeah. Yes.
Is he listening as we speak?
Probably. I'll probably hear from him in a couple of minutes. But he's actually kind of busy. He's got some connections. So he's like, oh, I have breakfast here and dinner with the distinguished alumni and all this other stuff. So, you know, I thought I'm going to have to keep him busy. He's keeping himself very busy this weekend.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I never get invited to those distinguished alumni things. So I'm glad it happens to somebody I know.
Sure.
Is Western going to find their first victory at homecoming?
Well, they suffered their first loss to Buffalo last season. I think that at this point in their season, they need a win. I think homecoming is the perfect lift for them to be back at home at Waldo Stadium after traveling out to Toledo last weekend. And I'm telling you, these kids just keep grinding, and they keep working hard for P.J. Fleck. And I expect them to win. Probably going to be another tight game, maybe a little tighter than some would expect against Buffalo. But Buffalo touts a lot of seniors and juniors on their team, and so it's not a cupcake, and none of these games are cupcakes for any team in the Mid-American Conference, but I think it's time that Western Michigan gets a win, and I think it happens tomorrow.
Cool. Always good talking with you.
Thanks for tripping me up on that football question, man.
Yeah, changing subjects in midstream. We are playing more than one sport this time of year, Carolyn.
Yes, we are.
Thanks for coming in. 590 WKZO time is 3:56. Raj Taylor taking you home on a Friday. Let's get an update from the WKZO.com newsroom.